Hello and welcome to another episode of Fight On Montana. I am your host, Adam Healy. Before we get to our episode today, we wanted to make sure we spent the time and said to make sure that you are rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. You can find us on most of the podcast platforms, Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. You can find us there, but rate, review, and subscribe. It helps us out. If you want to get a hold of us, the three platforms you can get a hold of us are on Twitter at Fight On Montana. Make sure you click the follow button. Also on Instagram at Fight On Montana. Make sure you click the follow button as well there. And you can also find us on our Facebook page at Fight On Montana as well. So let's not skip a beat. We have the great pleasure in having a former Grizz basketball player with us today. He is the great Brian Qualley.
Hi, Brian. This is Adam. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you today?
Good, good. Hey, thanks for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. No, it looked fun. I look forward to doing the podcast and reliving the Grizz days.
Awesome. So what are you up to these days?
I have been just enjoying Montana since March. My season in Japan got canceled at the end of March. So I've been home and I've had the longest off season of my career. So, I mean, it's been nice to be home, but now I'm trying to get back to Japan. This will be year 10 for me professionally. And I'm waiting to get all the paperwork sorted so that I can head back to Japan, hopefully in the middle of August. But it's difficult in this current climate to get back into Japan from America.
Oh, I bet. I can't imagine some of the things that are going on and all that paperwork. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, I need to go to the Seattle consulate or have them approve some paperwork and my passport and everything. And then once that happens, they give me a flight or a date, my team will, and then I need a virus test within 72 hours of taking off. So the timing of the whole situation, yeah, it's difficult. So the fact that I left March 20th, anybody that left after April 1st is not allowed back in until October. So,
oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. So I'm lucky.
Wow. Yeah, that's lucky by your part. So
yeah.
Your family, it seems like, you know, professional sports is in your blood. I believe, you know, your brother plays in the NFL. Is that correct?
That is correct. He's played his whole career with the New York Jets. And just this year, he signed with the Houston Texans. I believe it's year 7 for him.
That's awesome. And then, you know, you're playing overseas professionally. I believe did your dad play for NDSU?
He played for NDSU, and then he played for a short time, I believe, two seasons in the NFL before he had a pretty bad knee injury and quit. But back in 1975 or 6 when he was playing, he made more money farming in North Dakota than he did in the NFL. So
that
a little
is
different.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Two kids from Williston, North Dakota, playing professional sports. That just seems crazy.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ever happened before. Phil Jackson went to Williston High School, so the gym I grew up playing in is the Phil Jackson Fieldhouse.
Oh, wow.
But other than that, I don't know of anybody that came out of Williston, especially in a weird situation like playing professional basketball and professional football. So, yeah, very unique situation, and I don't know if it'll happen again, but maybe it will. I hope it does. I hope more kids come out of North Dakota and succeed professionally.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I bet you and your brother had a lot of battles. I have three brothers, so we had a lot of battles, you know, any kind of sport. So I bet you and your brother had a lot of battles in your days too.
We did. We played baseball, football, and basketball, and we ended up on the same team a few times, especially in high school. But even growing up, he's different than I am. I'm a little bit more less aggressive. That's why he's in the NFL. But, so there were different times during my childhood that My dad had to repair entire walls with my brother.
Oh
He
no.
would literally throw me through the drywall in the
Oh
basement. It happened
no.
three or four times, and they tell me about it all the time. I still remember it, but yeah, not a unique situation, but you could definitely say we had our battles, that's for sure.
That is crazy. So when you did you ever have any like nicknames growing up, coming into University of Montana, or when you're at University of Montana, any nicknames?
Yeah, they I had a few nicknames. Tinks and all the people on the team would call me BQ. And I can't remember, there was some big interview that Coach Tinkle did, and he called me like the big donkey in the middle or something like that. And my teammates were like, "This is Montana, you're not a donkey, you're more like a moose." And then for
There
some
you go.
reason, the final 2 years of my career, people, like my teammates, would yell like "Moose." So other than that, no, mainly BQ. BQ has been my nickname the whole career.
Nice. Hey, you should spin that off into like DQ and you can do some advertisement or something.
Yeah.
DQ,
Try
DQ with DQ, you know?
to turn it into some ice cream, some
There
free
you
ice cream.
go. There you go. So, hey, what did you like most about your time at the University of Montana?
Man, I have a lot of great memories. I mean, even going to school there, the campus, just coming to Missoula, growing up in Williston, things are completely different than Missoula. So I met my wife at the university. She Misty Atkinson at the time. She played for the Lady Grizz. Going to school, being on the beautiful campus, experiencing floating the rivers, and having success in basketball. I have so many memories. That's why I decided to stay in Missoula, because I love it. My family loves it, so there's a lot of great memories and a lot of fun experiences that I've had, and I plan to stay here for the rest of my life if possible.
Awesome. So coming out of high school, were you highly recruited and who were you recruited by?
I mean, yeah, I had a lot of offers. I had bigger offers to Pac-10 schools at the time, like University of Oregon, Washington State, Colorado State, Wichita State at the time was good. But then I had heavily recruited from North Dakota State. They wanted me to stay in North Dakota, go to the same school as my dad. And then I ended up choosing Montana, because I loved it when I came out here and visited. But also Krystowiak was the coach at the time, and then Tingle took over. Both were big men that I felt like could help me in my career. And also Derek Selvig committed to play here. And as soon as Derek committed, he was getting recruited by Arizona State, Texas Tech. He had scholarships to all these bigger schools, and he signed here to continue like his family legacy of the Selvig name, or like he enjoyed Montana. So once he signed, I figured if I signed, we would have a really good team in the future, and it all worked out well. And I really wanted to live in Montana my whole life, so I thought about going to the bigger schools, but I also wanted to be somewhere that I was happy living, and it all worked out well.
That's awesome. So coming out of high school, I believe you were the Mr. Basketball for North Dakota, and you came on right away to start eight games and be second in the league for blocks your first year playing college basketball. Were you expecting a lot or that much coming in?
I honestly had no idea what to expect. It's so strange to think back to be 17 years old and making a decision of where to go to school, knowing that it will kind of impact the rest of your life. Like, it's a big decision. So like, there were teams talking about redshirting me, teams talking about letting me play, and I had no idea what I wanted. I felt like I was trying to listen to people and think I knew what I wanted, but I had no idea. So when I came here and I was able to play as a freshman, it was exciting to me. It was a lot of fun. I remember like that first game when Tinks told me to enter the game. I was like, "So I guess I'm not redshirting." I had no idea. And then I still remember that. But like, to go out there and block shots, it was something that I felt like I could make an impact on right away. Like, I was a little bit underdeveloped in my offensive scoring or anything else, but defense, I knew that I could help out with the team. So I mean, I didn't know what to expect, but I was happy to be out there and happy to help any way that I could.
Yeah. So, and this is something I didn't put in here, but being like recruited, like how I've never been recruited sports wise, anything like that. So what is the process, like what is the process of that? And is it kind of weird at the same time, but also kind of like awesome, all these schools like coming to you and wanting you so bad? And did you feel kind of like some people were telling you the truth and some people were just kind of, doing like a show for you?
All of that, every single one of those things you said, yes, and that continues into the professional level for sure as well. So, as a high school kid, you don't know what you're really doing. You know that you want to go play basketball. You're getting calls and texts from all these different coaches that are telling you you'd be the best fit here and you'd love it here and we'll treat you the best, things like that. And you kind of have to weed through what you believe to be the truth and what you really think would be the best for yourself and your career. So yeah, it's awesome that all these schools want you to come play there, but it's weird. You're getting phone calls from all these different coaches all over the country. And then to extend on to that, as soon as I graduated from Montana, I had all of these agents that wanted to sign me. And that was way worse. Like weeding through all the lies of I can get you here, I can get you in the NBA, I can get you all these different jobs. So it's been a nonstop process for the last 14 years of my life. So I mean yes, it's been stressful and also awesome at the same time.
Wow. Yeah, I can't imagine like being 17 and making that much of a life altering decision. And also like
Exactly.
nowadays they have like open recruitment. I don't know if they did had that at your time where like they had like specific times at like midnight where they can start calling people. But that just seems nuts too.
When I was being recruited, they were not allowed to text you, and there was limits on like how many hours they could call you per week.
Okay.
Was like 2 hours a week. So you weren't getting blown up all the time with phone calls. But now I think they're allowed to text you and call you unlimited during a certain time period. So I
Yeah.
imagine that they're even more rough for kids these days.
Yeah, I talked to Andrew Strait and he said, when the open like calling period like started, he would get like phone calls from like midnight till like midnight the next night. And that just seems crazy.
That does not seem okay, especially for someone who's trying to go to high school and do all that stuff. Andrew Strait's another guy that taught me a lot of things while I was at the university because I was just a freshman while he was a senior. So that was the one guy who had everything offensively polished, and I was just out there trying to help him on defense.
Yeah, he seems like a really good guy, and definitely I had talked to him a couple weeks ago, so it was a good interview, and he seemed really nice.
That is awesome.
So during your career at University of Montana, I believe you made the NCAA tournament in, I believe, 2009 and two the 2009-2010 season. And how was that to play in an NCAA tournament game? Because I grew up watching basketball and I love basketball. It's like my first love. And I've always wanted to go to an NCAA tournament game and I haven't yet. It's on my bucket list. But how is it to play in one?
It was incredible. I mean, just the way that we won the championship was wild as well. Beating Weber State after we were down by like 20 points at halftime, and then we won. We went to the NCAA tournament against New Mexico. I had a lot of friends and family from North Dakota fly out to the game, all the way to San Jose, I believe, is where we were in the Sharks Arena, the NHL team arena.
Okay.
So that it, and we had a good draw against New Mexico. We lost at the very end. We had our chance to beat them. The funny thing is, I've seen so many of those guys overseas now. It feels like it doesn't really necessarily matter where you go to college. But like the NCAA game was it was a lot of fun. It was awesome. I really wish we won. We would have played the University of Washington next. But it was a unique atmosphere. So many teams, so many fans. It was awesome to be a part of.
Yeah, and that was kind of leading into my next question is in that tournament you nearly pulled the upset playing New Mexico. I believe were you guys a 14 seed?
14 seed. They were a 3 seed.
Yeah. And I think the final score, I think it was like 5 points at the end, but it was a lot closer than that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We were winning for a lot of the game. And I remember our best 3-point shooter had a decent look at a 3-point shot towards the end of the game to put us up, and it rimmed out. So I was thinking in my head, for sure we're winning this game. And then after that, we had to foul them, and that's when it stretched to 5 points. But it was a lot closer than that.
Yeah. So what was the feelings like that you had during that game of course you guys are going to be confident in yourself and know that you guys can play against anybody, but were your guys' feelings kind of up and down? Like, of course, at the end of the game, you know, it might be a little down knowing that you could have maybe pulled that upset, but what were your emotions and your feelings like during that game and after?
I personally had like one of my best games of my career, and I was really happy. I was sad that we lost, and I was really happy that we put on a big fight in front of, I mean, millions of people were potentially watching the game. I don't know. Like, the whole atmosphere was just like riding a high wave the entire time. And then we lost the game. It was really sad. But I think everyone enjoyed the whole experience. But then we went home. We had like a fire truck parade through Missoula that we won the Big Sky Championship. We went to the NCAA tournament. I remember a lot of good memories. I know a lot of guys were bummed. I was bummed out too, because we really, like, it would have been different if we got beat by 30 points. But like, the fact that we should have won that game was really sad, and it took a few days to get over that. But like, the experience that we had and the team that we had that year was, we all had a lot of fun. So like, I only look back on it with positive memories at this point.
That's awesome. If I recall, was Will Cherry on your guys' team at that point?
Yeah, Will Cherry was the one that stole the ball from Damian Lillard at half court to win the Big Sky Championship game. Yeah. So I look back a lot, because now you look at where Damian Lillard is at, and it's kind of wild to think about.
Yeah, that is definitely crazy. Mm-hmm. What was your favorite moment or story from your career at the University of Montana?
I mean, I would have to say it's that Weber State game. Losing and then coming back and then winning the championship was an unbelievable game. Literally, we were just giving the ball to Anthony Johnson, letting him do everything in the second half. But I would say that. And also, like, something that I am proud of that still is there today is the having the Big Sky shot block record.
Yeah.
And also getting from Darren Engelhardt. I don't want to mispronounce it, but I believe that's Engelstad.
Yeah,
he was the one at the University of Montana that had the record before. So to keep it at Montana is pretty cool. So between those two moments, there, I would say those are definitely the top moments of my whole career.
Yeah, it's crazy you mentioned that, because I was just going to talk to you about that as well. 200 and I believe 247 blocks in your career. That is amazing. Does that, have you ever processed that, kind of like realizing that you're not even just like Montana, but the whole Big Sky? Does that kind of go through your mind at this point in your career, or is it still kind of just surreal?
Yeah, no, it is weird to me. Like, I have the block ball in my basement here at home, but like, to think about it now, so in college, I had like all of the coaches telling me, don't jump, stay down, especially Coach Bill Evans. We talk about it now and we laugh together. He would be like, stay down, and then I would end up blocking 4 or 5 shots, and he'd be like, never mind, don't listen to anything that I'm because now overseas, I have coaches who are definitely like, no, we need you in the game, don't jump, you'll get a foul, things like that. So I still block shots, but I don't block nearly as much as I did in college. So it makes it even more special because now it's a job for me overseas. So I have to listen to them. So if they say don't jump, I have to not jump, or I don't know. It could be different. So yeah, it's something that I'm proud of and something that I worked on for a long time. So to know that I have the record is pretty special.
That's awesome. So during your time at University of Montana, what was a player that or team that you love to play against?
During my time there, Weber State was one of them, but the main one was Portland State. They were always at the top of the league. They had a bunch of high flying athletes that would try to dunk on us and things, and that was like a personal challenge for me to try to block all of those guys. And for the most part, it went well. But I remember we'd play Portland State. We would have a fully packed crowd. They were always at the top of the league, so I would definitely have to say Portland State. And some of their big men were really athletic, really really challenging to play against. So it was a lot of fun. But also, anytime we played Montana State was a lot of fun too. So I thought of both those situations. But Portland State was always at the top. Montana State was just a huge rivalry game that drew a giant crowd. So those were always fun games to play.
Yeah, what is that? What is that like playing the Grizz Cat game? I know, and I've seen the football team. Is it as action packed for basketball and a hated rivalry as the football?
I would say so. I would say it doesn't feel like a normal game. You go to Bozeman, or they come here. There's usually some special event with some certain like whiteout or all maroon, or when you go there, they try to like blue or yellow something to make it feel special. And we would always go to, I believe it's called the Mint in Belgrade, Montana. So the night before the game, we would always have that special meal. And it was just always a big event, whether we're home or away. You knew there was going to be a big crowd. You knew it was going to be action packed, and like most of the time, it was a very intense game through the whole 40 minutes. So I still think about those games, and my wife framed a picture for me from one of the Bobcat games that I have downstairs next to all the jerseys that I keep from all the years overseas. And so I will always remember the. Those games, especially towards my junior and senior year when I was more of a impactful player than I was in the first 2 years.
Nice. No, well, knowing that your wife, also played basketball for the University of Montana, do you guys ever like go at each other and say, "Oh, I had the better career," or "She had the better career"?
She does that all the time. She had some shoulder surgeries and some injuries, and so she would miss a lot of time on the court. And by the time she'd get healthy, she'd play some games. The season would end. It was frustrating for her. But at the end of the day, she has 3 championship rings, and I have 1 championship ring. So
Oh,
yes,
she had
she
that
does.
against you.
She lets me know that. Yeah, they've had a lot of success while Rob was there coaching with the Lady Grizz, and while she was on that team.
That's awesome. That's awesome. What is your favorite tradition at the University of Montana?
I always enjoyed I mean, there's a lot of things that I enjoy, but like I thought going up, so the basketball team when I was there was in charge of painting the M up on the mountainside, so I thought that was always a cool tradition.
Oh,
Like
cool.
every 3 years, so I got to paint it twice. And we would they would drive a truck to the top, and we would hike up, and then we'd be in charge of like just throwing paint down and then rolling it onto them. I thought that was a pretty cool tradition. I was trying to think of other ones, but I mean, other traditions like would be the Grizz Cat games, things like that. But
Yeah.
for the basketball team specifically, I thought painting them was pretty cool tradition for our team.
That's awesome. I wonder if they still do that. That's something that, I'll have to check into. That's cool.
I thought the same thing. I mean, I would hope that the basketball team's still in charge of doing that, but I have no idea. When I was up there this summer, it looked like it needed a new paint job, so I was hoping they would do it in the fall once it's preseason for basketball.
Yeah, I'll have to throw a message out to DeCure, Coach DeCure, and see if that's going to happen.
Check stick with him.
Yeah. In your senior season, I believe you beat some huge teams like UCLA and Oregon State and had some really close games as well. You ended up playing in the CBI tournament. What went wrong with that season? Because I believe Northern Colorado game. What went wrong in that game that you guys didn't wind up on being on top?
So it went wrong before the Northern Colorado game. We played, we were first place in the league, set to host the whole Big State tournament. And we went to Eastern Washington, a team that was like in the middle or bottom. And we ended up losing to them, I believe, in overtime. And it felt like such a, I don't want to say a cheated game, but like when I go back to it or when I talk to my former teammates about it, because that's one game that bothers me. I've played so many games. I've been playing professionally. Like, I don't really think about high school or college games, but that game really bothers me still. And I talked to them about it, like, am I crazy or were we cheated? And they're like, no, it was terrible. So we went into overtime. We lost that game, and it cost us hosting the Big Sky Championship in Montana. And then we ended up having to go to Northern Colorado and ended up playing them in the championship. And yeah, so I don't know what went wrong. They were tough. They were a good team, especially at home. So yeah. We would have played them at Montana. I think things would have been different. But we lost that Eastern Washington game, and we didn't host the tournament. I that was a goal of mine to host the tournament, and I was the only senior on the team. So to never host the tournament was frustrating, and then not to win the Big Sky Championship that year was also frustrating. But it all worked out. It was just sad that we didn't do that, but they ended up hosting the next 2 years in a row, I believe. So they yeah. followed, did it later.
Yeah, that would be definitely hard. And it seems like, you know, in careers and every year, there's got to be one of those games where you're like, really? Like just something's off in those games where it's like, that shouldn't have happened, you know, or like yeah. reffing, you know, not to complain about reffing, but, you know, there are some bad some bad calls out there sometimes.
I can't remember specific examples. I just remember things were pretty strange that game.
Yeah.
And then ended up losing. And I remember because Sean Stockton was on the team, so we had, like, John Stockton in the stands. We had a bunch of people there watching us because it was a big game to host the tournament. And I remember being so bummed that we lost that game. And that lost our rights to host the tournament in that one single game after a whole season of work. So it was frustrating. Yeah, and we did win some big games against Pac-10 teams. I have a really good record. The only game we lost was University of Washington, I believe. We beat Oregon. We beat Oregon State. We beat UCLA. We'd play Washington State in the preseason, but they never did. It was like a scrimmage. They didn't do like a keep score or anything. But yeah, we always had a really good record against those Pac-10 teams.
That's awesome. So at the end of your senior season, did you feel like since you guys didn't make it back to the NCAA tournament that it was kind of like a bum year or a failure like year, or was it just like, hey, you know, we came out on top, we got out to the CBI tournament? What were your guys' feelings?
Yeah, it felt kind of like a bummer, especially after going my senior year to the tournament. And then or my junior year, we went to the tournament, the NCAA tournament, and then my senior year to lose that game to Eastern Washington, and then to lose the championship in Northern Colorado. And then we kept practicing because we weren't sure if we would get picked up in the NIT or the CBI. So it was a weird time. And then once we did get picked up, we played the game and everyone gave their best effort, but we played against a good team. I think Duquesne was how you said
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
From way out. And, I've ran into a few of those guys overseas too, which is funny. But they were a good team, and they came all the way out to Montana. They beat us. It was a weird way to end the season, but I wish it would have went differently, but we gave our all in all the games, and that's just the way it happened.
Yeah. So do these teams that you've played against and players like, you know, from New Mexico and stuff, do they say anything to you like, oh, you know, we beat you or anything like that?
No, if I'm being honest, I don't know if they remember playing against me or not. But okay. I remember them. Like, yeah. Against New Mexico, their star player Hobbs and I ended up playing against in Italy, and we beat them in Italy. So it was some sort of redemption in a way,
nice.
I guess.
Nice. There you go.
And I ran into those other guys at like the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament for seniors. I ran into those Duquesne guys. I don't know. No, normally it's not like I remember beating you. It's like, hey, good to see you again. Like once you get to the professional level, it's kind of like a small basketball world community where everyone's kind of like, unless you're directly playing against each other, like if you just see each other in the league, it's normally pretty relaxed. Like, hey, good to see you. Glad you're doing well, that kind of thing. So,
okay,
it's different. It's different, especially 10 years in. Now I'm 31 years old. I've been doing this for a long time, so it's a completely different experience. The first few years were a complete grind, and I was fighting to prove myself in Europe and overseas and professionally. And now I'm just trying to do the best I can for whatever team signs me. So I'm not trying to prove myself anymore. I'm trying to help the team win.
So your senior season, you know, I know you were kind of bummed that it didn't turn out the way that you wanted, but you had an awesome year, winning defensive player of the year and also first team, all Big Sky. I believe you had like 95 blocks in one season. I think that's still the single season, I believe, block record.
I think it is too.
So, you know, I know you had the tournament didn't come to fruition, but that is an unbelievable year.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it was strange being the only senior on the team, but like winning Big Sky Defensive Player of the Year was also bittersweet because I was frustrated because they gave the MVP to the Northern Colorado point guard, Devin Beitzel. And I think he ended up going overseas for like half a season and then finishing his basketball career. So I was bitter about that because I think if we won, they would have picked different situations. I'm not bitter about it anymore, but I was upset at the time. No, it was a great senior year, and it felt so strange to be the only senior. I remember during the warm-ups, they would like play on the screen like, this is his team, things like random things like that would get me or the crowd or anybody hyped up before the game. So I thought it was pretty cool, and I had a lot of really great teammates that I still talk to this day that were really supportive and really awesome, and really they were only sad because they said like I was just at dinner a few weeks ago with Sean Stockton and a few of my former teammates, and they were like, we were only sad because we wanted to win for you when they lost that Eastern Washington game. So I thought that was pretty cool, but I mean, at the time it was just normal, but now when I look back at it, yeah, I was the only senior, so have a good year and to miss out at the end was sad.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of highs and lows, and like definitely yours, and also everybody has highs and lows. And
yeah,
do you think that kind of like after your college season, does it kind of level off with like your career, like with highs and lows, or is that just careers? It just ebbs and flows.
No, that's something that I talk about all the time, to my family, to my wife, to the friends, like the highs and lows of being I've been doing this for a long time now, from high school until now has been over half of my life, of highs and lows. Like, hey, we won the game this weekend, it can be a good week, or we lost the game, it's sad, it can be like sad. Like the highs and lows kind of drive me crazy, but I kind of love it at the same time. So I kind of look forward to the day in a few years, hopefully in a few years, that I will retire and then just kind of live a steady, happy, high life instead of the highs and lows, because they can drive you.
I bet. I can't imagine. So do you have any regrets about your career at the University of Montana?
I don't really have any basketball regrets. I loved everything that I did with basketball. I guess as I'm thinking about it now, I guess maybe one of the regrets that I could think about would be, now I've expanded my game to completely different. I've lost weight compared to what I was in college. I've expanded to like outside shooting 3-point shots. Like I guess I would have tried to expand my game a little bit more during my time there. Like, use the time more wisely instead of only working on my post stuff to like expand things. But at the time, that was working, so there was no reason to do that. But
Yeah.
also, I got an exercise science degree at the university, but now I've been doing real estate and business stuff, and in a way, I kind of wish that I got a business degree. I guess that would be the only regret, but the exercise science degree has worked well for my career as well. So, no real regrets. Just things that those kind of things are things that I think about, but no real regrets. Everything's worked out really well.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, who was the best player you played with at University of Montana?
The best player I played with, I would say, man, there was a few of them, because like I told you, Andrew Strait, when I was a freshman. I'm gonna name off a few. I can't name
Okay.
one. Name
Okay.
off a few. I really enjoyed playing with Jordan Haskett. Jack McGillis was incredibly talented. Anthony Johnson was obviously a really talented player, and but then as those guys graduated, it would be me, Derek Selvig. That's the whole reason I came to Montana, was for Derek Selvig. So I had a lot of fun playing with him. But also Kareem Jamar and Will Cherry. There's my list of people that I would say would be a lot of fun. I enjoyed playing with all my teammates, but the best one, those guys were all really talented. Kareem
Awesome.
won MVP multiple times. Jack, Jordan, they were all really good players.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's crazy. Montana is, a mid-major, but the talent and just the players that they have and who have gone through there, if you really look at it and kind of dig deep, it's amazing the talent that the University of Montana has had in basketball, over the years. It's just crazy to look at.
I completely agree with you. I think that mid-major, I mean, I believe Gonzaga is still considered a mid-major, or was at some point. So like, I don't know. I feel like that we have the capability to grow into more, but there's also been a lot of successful players that have came out of Montana that have done really great things. So
Yeah.
it's interesting.
So I think you kind of did this for my next question, but if you had to make an all Grizz great team, who would be on your starting five?
I was looking at all the list of former players of like the all-time scorers, and I think Larry Krystkowiak has to be on there. Sugar Ray, Michael Ray Richardson. The funny thing about him is he played after the NBA. He played over in Italy for the team I was just on 2 years ago. I actually saw him and met him when he came over to Italy for like a memorial game or something like that. And they introduced him and everything, and I said, "Hello, I'm from Montana," et cetera, et cetera. So that was pretty funny.
Oh, that's cool.
I would say Will Cherry's on the list. I would say, man, that's tough. I love Kareem's MVP, maybe even a two-time MVP. I can't remember. I want to put myself on the list, but I'm not going to put myself on the list.
Hey.
I'll put Tinks on the list as a center. Well, me or Tinks, one of us on the center list.
You
Krystkowiak at
can
the
put
four.
yourself on there. That's awesome,
Yeah, Michael Ray, and then Kareem and Will. I think we'd have an incredible team.
Yeah, that would be an incredible team. So did you, after your senior season, prepare for the NBA draft or overseas, or how did you go about that?
I went to Impact Training in Las Vegas, and I was there for a whole month, and I was just training with a bunch of NBA players, a bunch of guys in my similar position, and we were all just training to stay in shape. I mean, I probably realistically could have just stayed in Montana, kept lifting weights and training with the coaching staff, but I didn't know what I was doing. I thought that I had to do something special now that I was a pro, but I could have just stayed in Montana. But I went to Impact for a month. I prepared there. I got offers to go overseas. I said that I didn't necessarily want to go to Turkey. And then, of course, my very first offer comes from Turkey. And I'm glad it did. I'm glad it did, because it was a really good offer, especially for a rookie. I signed there, and it like immediately like expanded my mind into how big the world is and all different cultures, things like that. And I had a really great experience as far as the people, the culture, the food, everything was great. The team was kind of shady in some aspects, and that also made me grow up to realize what overseas basketball could be like, the business side of things. But like, as far as living in Turkey, I had a really great experience. So that opened my mind to set the tone for the rest of my career, and I think it was a perfect spot to go my first year.
Awesome. What do you mean by shady?
Shady. What I mean by shady is you sign a fully guaranteed contract, and I was watching teammates get cut left and right. Like, nope, your contract's done. You're done. Things are done. Oh, wow. They were cutting players. Things that go on behind the scenes that you don't know about, you don't want to know about. I found out later that I was on the chopping block half the season, and then I would go have some really good games and they would decide to keep me, things like that I didn't even know about until later. Most teams, like in Germany and Belgium, like European Union teams, don't do that kind of stuff, but Turkey, Russia, Ukraine, those kind of countries, a little bit more Eastern countries, kind of tend to do that kind of thing. Even if it's written in your contract and you're backed by FIBA, they still try to work out some sort of buyout to release players if they're not happy. So that kind of thing can be shady. But like in Germany, wow, if you sign a contract, you're getting your whole contract with no questions asked.
That's crazy. That would be, I'm glad that you didn't know that, because that would be so stressful. Oh my gosh.
I had no idea. So same with Japan now. I mean, things are like, there was a pandemic this last year. Technically, like, other teams in Europe stopped paying players, and Japan paid me my full salary. And I'm going back to Japan this year on a new team because I was like, this is the perfect place to be in this weird current situation. So they're kind of like Germany. They're super organized. They're honest. So that's the place I want to be.
That's awesome. What was it like to go from college to preparing for the NBA and overseas? Like, how big of a difference is that?
It's different. It's completely different. Because in college, you know, I was out there. I'd been there 4 years. I was trying to be a team player, be with my team, fight. And, like, once you get to a professional, like, you want to be a team player. At the same time, you have to look out for yourself, because, like, if you are a team player but you don't put up good stats, good points, good rebounds, things like that, then your career can be over quickly. So I guess I was just trying to be bigger, faster, stronger after college, and just try to continuously improve every year. But also you got to be somewhat selfish to succeed as a professional, you know. You have to look out for yourself and look out for the team. So it's a different mindset. And the biggest difference is you play a lot more games. So you have to be mentally stronger to prepare to play all of these games back to back to back, and like throughout a whole 9 month season instead of just a few months in the winter like college.
Okay. Well, and you kind of mentioned that, like, you know, when you're at University of Montana, you know, you were just kind of post oriented, and now you're, you know, expanding your game. Do you think that's kind of like, just like what you go into like college, like they're like, okay, you fit this for us right here. This is your role. And more like professionally, it's like, okay, this is your craft. I've got to expand and expand my craft.
Yeah. I mean, especially so most teams overseas in Europe have 5, 6, 7 foreigners per team. In Japan, there's only 2, 3, or 4. So it's a lot less. So you can kind of expand to do whatever you want, whatever the team needs. But in Europe, yeah, I've been on some really good teams, like in Russia, where it's like, this is your role. You were limited in your role. So kind of in college, we had such a good team with so many talented players that you just did your role. Nobody needed me to shoot threes in college because we had a lot of really good shooters. So, but also I've tried to, like, that's part of being a professional. You expand to do different things to fit different situations to, in a way, make yourself more valuable. So I would say you're completely correct in that assessment. Like, college is kind of like, this is your role and we don't need you to shoot threes. We recruited 5 other 3-point shooters. So
yeah.
So it's just different.
Yeah. What is the hardest thing about playing professional basketball?
The hardest thing, being away for 9 months, I would say, being away from from home, from family, from America, like from English speaking people. Like the basketball side is kind of fun. You're still playing basketball. You're traveling all over the place, but like I haven't been home for a Christmas or a Thanksgiving in 10 years, which is tough. Yeah, it's really tough. So I'd say that's the hardest part. Like financially, it's great. There's a lot of money to be made as a professional, but like, yeah, I would say 100%. It's not the basketball side. It's the being so far away from home, out of your own culture, out of your own language, just being able to adapt to the cultures and the languages and being so far away from home.
What was your favorite spot that you landed at, like culture wise and just experience wise?
Easily Germany. We had both of our kids in Germany. It felt the most comfortable. The fans were the nicest. The organizations were run the best. Everything about it was the easiest to adapt to from America. I've been to a lot of different countries now. I've been to pretty much every country in Europe, actually. I haven't lived in every country, but I've visited or played games in. And I would say Germany was just awesome. We lived in southern Germany for 1 year and northern Germany for 2 years in Oldenburg. And easily Germany was the easiest to assimilate into and the easiest to relax and enjoy the culture and our life there.
So does your family go with you now or do they stay back in Montana?
They have been with me every single year. But this year with the virus and things like that, Japan has some strict lockdowns and I'm the only one that's allowed in because I have the work visa. So
okay.
For this year, until the unforeseen future, I will be over in Japan by myself. So, but normally they go with me every single year.
That's cool. Cause I believe you have a couple kids. That would be cool for them to experience that and all the places you guys have been. That's really cool.
Yeah. I have a 6-year-old daughter and a 3-year-old son and, they've been everywhere with us. They've gotten to learn Italian, German, different languages. They were in Russia, but they didn't learn that language too well. There was not really a good school. It was difficult language. And last year in Japan, I was in a small city, so there was no real school option for them there either. So they didn't really learn Japanese other than the little bit of Japanese that I speak. And this year, the frustrating part is they had two different international schools, a big city, two different cars for me and my wife, a big apartment, and now they can't even come over. So it's a little frustrating, a little sad.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
But maybe they can come over in a few months. We'll see.
Yeah, hopefully this kind of clears out. And yeah, I'm for that too, man. So you played on a lot of places overseas. Is there, you know, you kind of went over some of the criteria and some of the inner workings of how different countries do things. Is there a thing about long-term deals or short-term deals? Is it a little different than the U.S. on how they sign deals? Is it year by year? Like, what is that process?
Yeah, it's different. I had 1 2-year contract in Oldenburg. I stayed there for 2 years. I could sign multiple year deals. I had a 2-year deal in Russia, but only 1 year was guaranteed, and then they decided to change the whole team after that first year. So. I don't know exactly how the NBA contracts works, but like, normally I sign it. Any deal that I sign is guaranteed fully after you pass your physical. So like if I sign a 2-year deal, it doesn't mean I get a fully guaranteed 2-year deal. I get a guaranteed deal as long as I pass the physical for the first year and I pass the physical for the second year.
Okay.
But for my career, for the most part, I've always just signed 1-year deals or a 1+1, which is like a team option or a player option. So if you sign a 1+1, there's a lot of those overseas. And then that's what I had in Russia. And then it was a team option and they decided to opt out of it with everybody. So, but for the most part, at this point, I just signed 1-year deals and I've been changing teams and kind of grinding to get to a certain level in my career. I think my 6th or 7th season, I had My fifth and sixth season, both in Oldenburg, Germany, were like the best seasons of my whole career, and that led to where I've been the last 3 or 4 years. So, yeah, but at this point, I've just been doing one-year deals the whole time. So those first few years, I was trying to grind out to get to a situation that I was comfortable with. It's difficult. You don't often hear of people signing anything longer than a two-year deal overseas.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of doing my research and kind of looking at and seeing that. Is it more like just kind of maximize what you get to with money and just overall too, and liking this? Because you've been in a lot of places that you might not like the team or how they do things, where you can get out and find somewhere else as well.
Yeah, it's kind of a mess. If you leave, then you got to work out a buyout with the team, but it's possible to get out and leave. But normally I sign a one-year deal because, yeah, I try to find the best situation where the money, the living, the whole situation, the basketball level all works out to be the best. So it's also different overseas because you sign contracts that are guaranteed, but they're also like a net contract. So you don't pay the taxes. The team pays the taxes, and you just sign what is a net contract afterwards. So you don't see any of that side of things. Okay. Then I get a foreign tax credit, and I bring it back to America and use it with the American IRS. So it's a completely different situation than my brother in the NFL who watches half of his contract disappear.
Oh.
His taxes.
Oh, so my like, gosh.
Yeah, so I see whatever I sign for is what I get. So it's a lot easier that way.
Huh. Well, I've actually heard that from a couple players and with both sports, football and basketball, that sometimes more so basketball, because football is, you know, you got the Canadian league, but it's more, sometimes it can be more lucrative overseas than it is here in the US.
Yeah. When I went to Russia and some other places that I've been, it would have exactly worked out that way. If I had a league minimum contract in the NBA and I had taxes and pay for my house and my car and things like that, it worked out better to be in Russia or Italy or something like that, you know. So, but the league minimum of the NBA keeps going up every year. Obviously, I would like to be in the NBA. And I was with the Charlotte Hornets for a few months in training camp, but I got to experience the private planes, the nice hotels, all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, I just told myself I would do it once.
Yeah.
Because I missed out on a few months that I could have made overseas. So it was a fun experience, but I'm happy to be with a contract overseas.
Nice. How hard is it to go from team to team or country to country, kind of on your psyche and on your emotions?
It's difficult. I mean, it's also fun and exciting to like new cultures, new experiences, but it's difficult because, I mean, if I go back to the same place, I am comfortable. I know what I'm getting myself into. It's relaxing, enjoyable. It's a new team, new country, new situation. It's kind of stressful. I don't know what's going to be like. I don't know anything. So it can be stressful for sure. I mean, nothing about this. At this point, it clearly kind of feels like a job to me, but I still enjoy basketball. But it definitely can be stressful, but I still enjoy it and I still look forward to it. I'm excited to get to Japan in a few weeks and excited to start another season. So once I'm not excited, then I think it'll be time to be done, but I'm still excited and I still look forward to it.
That's awesome. So you mentioned earlier with the about the Charlotte Hornets that you got to be signed for a couple months with the Charlotte Hornets. What did that mean to you? Kind of just make sure that you're like, okay, well, you know, I'm good enough or this dream to play in the NBA has been accomplished. What did that mean to you?
It was cool. I mean, it was cool. It was also a little bit, I don't know. I feel like a lot of the guys, not a lot of the guys in the NBA, but some of the guys in the NBA, it's kind of like who you know, where did you go to school, that kind of thing. Because I did really well in the training camps. So did one of my other guys that was just there for training camp, Justin Cobb. he did really well as well. And the coach was like, I feel like you're an NBA guy. We just don't have room for you on the roster. And I just, it was a little frustrating. It was cool to experience everything and to hang out with the guys. They were all really great to be around. It was cool to experience staying in the Ritz-Carlton and the private jets and all the different stuff that I got to experience. But like, at the same time, I felt like it wasn't necessarily a fair opportunity. I don't feel like I ever got a fair opportunity. Because when I graduated in 2011 was the year of the NBA lockout. There was no summer league. There was barely any NBA workouts. So I'm not, it all worked out well. I've had a successful career overseas. I just feel like had I put my full attention towards the NBA and like joined the D League or the G League instead of going overseas, it could have eventually worked out. But I chose to take the safer guaranteed route, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's hard with a family too. You've got to think about your family as well. And
yeah,
that would be hard. So let our listeners know, how long are the seasons overseas, and when does a season start? When does a season end?
Normally every year I go over in mid-August, and the season over in Europe ends in June normally in June, sometimes in May if you don't make the playoffs. But the best part of Japan is you play so many games. You usually play Saturday, Sunday back to back, and then Wednesday. You fit in 3 games a week, and the season's over in March or early April if you're in the playoffs. And so from August to April, it's way better than from August until June or even July if you're in the championship. So it really goes 9 months, then I'm home for 3 months, and then I go back over. So this year to be home for 5 months has been awesome.
Nice. That's awesome to have more time with family. So do you play like 70 or 80, 80 or 90 games a season then?
Man, that's a great question. I'm trying to think. We had our games cut short this year.
Okay.
Normally not 80, normally like 60.
Okay.
60 games. So the NBA is like firing games off all the time.
Yeah. But yeah,
we have more spaced out, a little more practices in between.
And that's probably good for you guys, because you guys have a little bit more time to recover. And do you guys see less injuries then with that?
In my experience, I've been pretty fortunate with my teammates and people as far as being worn down by the season. People get worn down, but like there's more time for treatment, more time for rest, things like that. So, but there's also like with the NBA, you go on a private jet, you fly directly to the next city, the games. We have to stay in a hotel, join the commercial flight with everybody else, things like that. So it adds extra time to the whole situation.
Okay. So your team in Japan, what are they called? Like, what's their name called?
The new team is called the Gunma Crane Thunders. with the S. Thunders, yeah. So
Crane Thunders. Well, that's interesting.
And last year I played for the Shimane Susanoo Magic, and now I'm in the Gunma Crane Thunder, in a much bigger city.
Oh, okay, nice. So do you get to follow much Grizz basketball? You're probably horrendously busy, but do you follow Grizz basketball much?
Not that I'm so busy. It's that the time change makes things difficult to watch games live. But I try to follow the games. I follow my brother's season. I follow the Grizz season. Those are the two things that I follow while I'm overseas. I don't necessarily follow the NBA that closely until the playoffs start. But like normally, yes, I follow the Grizz.
Nice. Do you mind asking or answering some questions about that, or do you feel not really well enough?
No.
Okay.
Ready for any Grizz questions.
All righty. Well, what do you think the Grizz, from just what you watched last year, what do you think they would need to improve on to be successful for next year?
I think they've been successful for a few years. They've Travis is a good coach. Coach Secure, he's a good coach. They play differently than when I was there. Like, things were slower, a little bit more based around like posting up and cutting and things like that. They're a fast, athletic team, so I enjoy watching them play. I'm not nearly around them enough to offer advice of what they should work on, but I think that they've had a lot of success, and I think Travis knows definitely what he's doing. So I'm excited for the future and to watch. And I hope that they're able to have a season. I also hope that I'm able to have a season this year.
Exactly. Exactly. Who do you think is a player that you think is like one that to watch out for that you saw last year?
I got to go with my guy, Mac Anderson. He's someone that I've been working with this summer, actually, the last few summers. Awesome. Yeah, so he does some workouts with me at the peak. I don't specifically do workouts with him to help him, but like I do my own workouts, and then he joins me and I try to help him with things. So I'm hoping that the work we put in can help him, and I think that he's a really talented athletic player, and I hope to that he has a lot of success this year and in the future.
Yeah, he definitely showed some upside this year. He's very athletic and, you know, for how big he is. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that. So this is my last question, Brian. Is coaching something that you, after, you know, your professional career, is coaching something that you want to get into? Or what do you see as something that you're going to do after basketball?
That is a wonderful question. I get asked that a lot about coaching. So obviously I love basketball. I have other passions in my life too, though, that I'm intrigued by. So like coaching is something that I feel like would be fun, especially if I could stay in Missoula. I wouldn't want to leave to go to a different team and coach and make my family move all over, because I've already done that my whole life. I would love to coach. I would be interested in coaching, especially at the university. But I also have interest, like I've been investing in real estate since I've been a professional. So the real estate market, then potentially becoming a realtor in the future, intrigues me. I have so many interests with anything electronic, anything with a car, classic cars, new cars, anything along that line. So I don't know. I have a feeling that I'm going to get a real estate license. And then I'd be interested in possibly coaching, and then maybe do some other things on the side. Hopefully this whole basketball career has set me up to where I can kind of pick and choose what I want to do.
That's awesome. Sorry, I just wanted to ask you one more thing. Like, how long do you expect to be playing overseas, or how much longer?
Well, my body feels good, and financially it still makes a lot of sense. I'm still at a high level overseas with my career, so but my parents are moving from North Dakota, where they lived their entire life, and are literally living next door to me in Missoula. They're gonna close on their house in a few weeks.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
That excited to start my transition to live back here. But I think if I still got a few years left in my body and mentally, so I would say another few years. I don't know an exact number, but less than 5 years, and hopefully more than 1 year.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I totally appreciate you being willing to come on the podcast and talk about your career and what you're going through now. And I just really appreciate you coming on, and appreciate what you've done for the university, and wish you the best in all your endeavors, man.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you having me on, and thank you very much. And it was exciting to relive some of those things that I hadn't thought about for a while. So it was fun to talk to you, and I hope people enjoy listening.
That'll do it for another episode of Fight On Montana. I would like to thank our guest, Brian Qualley, for coming on and spending the time with us to talk about his career at the U of M, and also professionally as well. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts at. Remember to spread the word to every Grizz fan you know. Even if they're not Grizz fans, maybe they'll like it. Spread the word of Fight On Montana. And until the next time we are on, Fight On.